Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery. Today we've got some listener feedback.
Then we have an interview with Judica Isles.
There's no witchcraft or spelled out segments today.
But we've got a jam-packed show that we're sure you'll enjoy. So please, stay tuned. All right. Well, welcome to New World Witchery, episode 16. We thought we would do something we haven't done in a while, which is... Why are you smiling at me so...
Because you said thought.
What?
Thought. I don't know. You said thought weird.
Today we would get into. I can't do that accent.
I can't either.
Anyway, today I thought we'd get into some of the listener feedback, which we haven't done in a few episodes.
Yeah.
Actually, probably almost 10 episodes by this point.
Yeah.
And we've gotten a few really excellent questions, both on the blog and through our email. And we wanted to take some time to... tackle those and do our best to provide some answers and show just how ignorant and dumb we are. But we're going to do our best. So bear with us. Hopefully this will be useful to somebody out there.
Hopefully.
All right. So okay. What do we have first?
The first one, let's see. They say, my question deals with skeleton keys. I went to a store in Long Island, New York, where I found old skeleton keys and a railroad spike. They say they knew what the spike was used for, but bought the keys because they were interesting, but knew of no magical value. So...
And other than the movie, The Skeleton Key, we haven't really discussed those
no,
on the show.
No, we haven't.
Well, what about you? What do you think? What do you think skeleton keys are useful for?
To me, since obviously, you know, what you use in the mundane is really good for what you use in, like, the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
Since we use keys to access other rooms, mm-hmm. open doors, that would be what you would use it for.
Okay.
I kind of think of it like almost as a, I don't know, like a, just a tool to, I cannot say what I'm thinking.
Are you thinking like a sort of a tool to go between the worlds?
Yes. Thank you. But
sort of almost a hedge crossing tool, but in a different, rather than crossing the hedge, I'm sort of opening the gate, opening the door.
Yes.
I can totally see that.
Thank you. I don't know what my problem is. But anyway, like. Sort of like, you know, even if you just kind of set it in front of you and use it to focus and just sort of steady your mind,
mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, like you're not actually going to, you know, find a keyhole or anything to put mm-hmm. it in. But what about you?
That's probably the first way that pops to mind for me, too, mm-hmm. is thinking of it as sort of a, you know, you can take it to a crossroads and use it, you know, you combine the right number of things in the real world and you get a certain other world effect. So you go to the crossroads with a skeleton key and maybe an offering of some sort. Or you get the right combination of things in the real world, and you can access the other world in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first way I would think of it. Also, because most skeleton keys have loops on the top, I tend to think of them in a similar fashion to like a hold stone, where looking through them allows you to see into that other world.
Oh.
Because it's a sort of a gateway piece.
Mm-hmm.
They're iron, so they can be used.
You know, I could see using like the other part of a skeleton key, the door, like the keyhole.
Mm-hmm.
Using one of those for that as well.
Yeah, I don't see why you couldn't.
Sorry, I'm just getting ideas.
Lane's feeling crafty, people.
That's interesting. Okay, anyway, yeah. I'm sorry, continue.
Yes, but so yeah, and then they're iron, so they can be used to repel negative entities in certain senses. And of course, you know, being metal conduit for power, force, and conjure bags. Sometimes you'll throw them into mojo bags for road opening. Things like that. Any of those uses. Basically, their symbolism is sort of their inherent power.
Right.
But, I mean, if you have other uses, I'd love to hear them. Hear other people's takes on these. I think Papa Toadbone had some uses for them that I didn't get a chance to look into, but he had some really interesting stuff on those, I think, at one point.
I wonder if you could use them in, like, ancestral work?
Sure, why not?
Like, you know, because they're...
Like
they're kind of relics of the past.
They're like opening the doors to the past,
yes.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they get you in anywhere. Yeah.
Especially if it was, you know, if it's a key from your family or something like that.
Oh, yeah. That would be phenomenally powerful, I would think. Good one. All right.
Okay, so next question.
All right, next.
Oh, but thank you for your question, by the way. We really appreciate it.
And we're not using this person's name because we didn't get permission to use their name on the podcast. But if we have permission, we'll say the name. If we don't, then please forgive us. We didn't want to step on any toes. Right. So, this next one, we do have permission. This is from Alexandra. She said, she starts off by saying, I love your podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks so much. Yay. She said, I never had an interest in hoodoo or my ancestry. It turns out a lot of my family is from Louisiana, and it is rumored that my great-grandmother practiced hoodoo. How cool is that? Very, very, very cool. Yeah. However, I have a question. What are the basic supplies that most hoodoo practitioners need? Does it depend on what you're working on at the very moment, or what? It's a great question. Mm-hmm. There is a blog post that I did on this that gives you a good basic rundown of stuff, but let's go through it here.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say, some people may not
be checking the blog.
Yeah, I don't care. So, and that's totally fine. So, yeah. Let's do that.
Let's run through it. I'll let you do what you know, and then I'll see if I can add anything.
Hmm.
The master, he tests the student.
Well, the first thing I'm going to say is candles, just plain candles. Usually beeswax, is that correct?
It doesn't matter.
Maybe soy?
It really doesn't matter. Okay. I mean,
what are the ones that you gave me?
I gave you beeswax.
That's what I thought, because they burn down quickly.
Yeah.
And that's the benefit for me, mm-hmm. in that, you know, you don't want to be sitting by your spell all night. Mm-hmm. So if it burns down quickly, then...
Mm-hmm. And pretty cleanly.
Yeah, that
too. They don't have a lot of smoke.
Right. I would say some sort of special paper.
Okay.
For, you know, petitions. I would say paper for petitions or... For, you know, we put them in honey jars, mm-hmm. we put them in vinegar jars.
Like name papers.
Yeah, name papers, that's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to say.
And for that, you just rip up a brown paper bag, very traditional.
Yeah, or you can have like a notebook where you just tear pages from, or mm-hmm. usually some red cotton cloth is going to be a good one.
Mm-hmm. Good. Why do people need that?
For mojo bags.
Yes. And I'm a bit of a stickler on that. I generally only make mojo bags in red or occasionally white.
Okay.
Just because that's kind of... everything I read about it just makes it think that makes me think that that's really how it was done. And that the red has this blood connotation.
Yeah.
And so I like that. But, all right, what else?
I don't know. You talk a little.
All right. okay, so some of the other stuff that I would say that you would need if you're starting a basic practice in conjure, like Lane said, candles. I think candle holders are important. You want to have at least two separate candle holders that you can use, because you never know when you'll be working spells that require you to have two things going on at once.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you're doing candle spells, you have to move them closer to each other, further apart during the spell. So have multiple candle holders. That's always good. And those are usually pretty cheap at yard sales. Hijon root. I think anybody starting with hoodoo would do well to have at least one hijon root floating around somewhere. For women, angelica root is very good. If you don't want to do hijon.
What is that used for?
They're the power. They're the big power roots. Hijon can be mojo all itself. Carry it around with you. It provides potency for male sexuality. It provides mastery of social situations, can provide gambling luck. It's everything. It's the everything herb. Angelica root is the same for women.
Okay.
And it's not to say that women can't use hijon, men can't use angelica. I actually use angelica quite a bit myself, but those are the traditional assignments for them. Let's see. I'd also say there are certain condition oils, I think, that are very, very good to have floating around. Uncrossing, of course. Just in case you run up against something where you need to get uncrossed. Attraction, because it's general purpose. You can use it for love, money, luck, anything positive. Van Van, again, very good for luck, love. Also can help you overcome obstacles. Commanding or compelling, if you intend to do that kind of work, then I would recommend getting some of that. Blessing oil, which is really, really good for home blessings and cleansings, any kind of ceremonial work. With blessing oil, you could also use just simple holy oil, and you can also just use olive oil.
Okay.
Just, you know, say a prayer over it and use plain olive oil. Works just as well. Fiery wall of protection, I think, is also an excellent oil to have on hand. And there are tons and tons of oils out there for almost any purpose you could name, but those are ones that I think are pretty basic. You could also, like I said, use olive oil and modify it with the herbs that you need. and you could get pretty close to what you need as far as a condition oil goes. Whiskey, I think it's important to have whiskey or some sort of booze, mostly for offerings. If you don't use whiskey, if you don't use alcohol, period, tobacco is usually a reasonable substitution for that. Salt. Who doesn't have salt in their home? But if you can get sea salt especially, that's really good. It's just amazing protective, amazing for curse breaking. It can also be amazing for reversing magic. Red and black pepper. Most people have black pepper. I think most people have red pepper too. Either flakes or powder. Want those because those are good for negative magic and reversing negative magic. And for heating stuff up. Fourth is vinegar, which is an all-purpose sort of protective and can also be used to cause harm to an enemy if you need it for that. Don't buy it. I'll just go ahead and say, don't buy Fourth Thieves vinegar. Even if for some reason we ever start selling it, don't buy it from us. Because you can make this stuff so easily. Just buy cider vinegar, add red and black pepper, garlic, and mustard seeds, and just let it sit and shake it every couple of days, and in a few weeks you'll have it. And you can always customize that a little bit with other edible herbs. You do want it to be edible because, one, you might be putting it in someone's food for part of the mojo work. And two, it's an amazing salad dressing.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. Sweetener of some sort. Sugar, honey, molasses, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. We've talked about those jars all the time. Yes. So obviously they're important. Okay. And you've mentioned Red Claw squares.
Yes.
What else?
So we talked about doing the jars, so you're probably going to need bottles and jars laying around. And Corey and I both use just recycled jars from stuff that we buy at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Baby food, lots and lots of baby food.
Yeah, you have a lot of baby food floating around, so those jars are perfect. And I know I've used, like, you know where you buy the whole cinnamon sticks?
Yeah.
These, those. You know, you just peel the...
labels?
Yeah, thank you. Labels. Ugh, what is wrong with me tonight? Anyway, peel the labels off, throw them in the dishwasher, and, you know, they're great to use. What next? Envelopes or plastic baggies mm-hmm. for collecting ingredients or gathering, you know, herbs or any other type of material.
Mm-hmm.
I know Corey simply just folds up pieces of paper and sort of tapes them, and that works just as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I carry those kinds of things around with me a lot. This is going to sound awful, but it's because, you know, if I'm visiting someone's home and I don't know if I'll have to work a spell on them... If I use their bathroom, most people will leave their hairbrushes out on the counter.
You sneaky devil.
I'm pretty terrible. I'm like, I never know if I'm going to need to do a spell on them, so tuck that away for later use.
Interesting.
You're like, you can never use the bathroom in my house again. You will go in the yard, sir.
You go out there where the dogs go.
Okay. And then the last thing I would recommend, and this is a personal recommendation, but I say if you're doing conjure, especially the Bible or some holy book. I use the Bible not because I am Christian, but because I use the Psalms and because it's my mother's, and there's something to that. I think you can use the, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, you can use the Quran, you can use, I think I've even said you could use the poems of Rumi. Who was a mystic poet. It's not so important which religion it is. It's just important that you have a religious text that you can use to sort of frame your spell work, because those things have been done so many times. It's sort of like, you know, if you hear a commercial often enough, then the song gets stuck in your head. The jingle from the commercial gets stuck in your head.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the divine, you know, spirits and things like that, there's a sort of a similar thing. They hear these prayers often enough, they get stuck in their head, so they're going to pay more attention to them.
So, are you comparing us to, like, freecreditreport.com?
I kind of am. Human beings, the crappy commercials of the universe. And it's not a particularly elegant way to explain it, but I do think that it's important to have some text that you turn to that you feel comfortable using in spell work. Doesn't have to be one that you use every time. Doesn't have to be one that you, you know, can thump at people. It just has to be something that you have a personal connection to.
Even if you've written it yourself?
I don't know. I don't know. After our last Book of Shadows episode, I might consider that, but it has to be something that you've done a lot with.
Okay.
It can't be like, you know, I've tried out this rhyme once.
Gotcha.
You know, and granted, like, you can try out the rhyme once, but let it build over time. Because, I mean, you're going to have to try it once at least to make it work at all.
Right.
That's not really well explained, but...
No, I got it.
You're following that?
Hopefully they do.
I hope they do, too. I hope that's not a body language thing.
1-800-SAFE-AUTO. Play it safe. Safe auto.
Yeah. I hang my head in shame.
I'm trying to think of all, like, the horrible jingles that get stuck in my head.
You just gave Safe Auto a free plug on our show.
Oh, I did.
Good for you.
Thanks. I try.
Mm-hmm. What's our next question?
Let's see. Okay, this is from... Does she...
I don't know if she ever says that we can use her name. Wait,
this is two separate ones.
Okay.
Yeah, this is one and that's...
Oh, groovy. Oh, I see.
Okay.
Now that that's out of the way.
Yeah. So, in our next email, this person who didn't give us permission, so we're just going to say this person.
This person.
She said she found us through Velma Nightshade.
Yeah, thanks, Velma.
Which is awesome. Okay, so she says she's so ecstatic to learn that all her life she's been involved in Ozark Mountain Magic. She just didn't know it, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
She says, you've really opened my eyes to a whole new path. I've been searching for what was right for me, and it was right under my nose. So, okay, so she has several questions. First, can you please tell me where I can find out more information on American witchcraft? Can you suggest books or websites that I can research?
Okay.
So let's answer that first, and then we'll get to other questions.
All right. Books and websites, I would say, start with newworldwitchery.wordpress.com. Shameless plug. We actually have tons of resources that we cite on there all the time. I probably should put together, like, a resources page.
There you go.
I really should do that. What am I doing? Why am I not doing that? I'll do that, people. there's tons of resources that you can find through us. What about other places?
Well, not to be all smug about it, but I kind of feel like there's not like a compendium really anywhere.
Mm-mm. There's really not, as far as like...
To me, the term American witchcraft has really just started to sort of take on its own separate...
Identity,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not to say like, oh, we're at the forefront of this.
I'm not trying to be.
That's what you meant by like, this may sound smug. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is that there seems to be a groundswell of interest in this.
Yes.
All of a sudden in the past few years.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've only been on for less than a year.
Yeah.
So we're part of that groundswell. But yeah, so keep your eyes peeled. There's going to be more, I think, of that coming down the pike. I'll try to put together a resources page. As far as books go, Vance Randolph's Ozark Magic and Folklore, which I reference all the time, is excellent for that. The Foxfire books, which are actually about Appalachian magic, have little tidbits of stuff that made its way to the Ozarks eventually, so you'll find some stuff in there. Richard Dorson's Buying the Wind and some of his other folklore books also have little bits of Ozark lore in them. Those would be the first ones I'd suggest. And like I said, I'll try to put together a resource page.
That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. All right, what was the rest of the question?
She says, next, can you list the different types of American witchcraft?
Well, we kind of did this in our promo, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Can we remember our promo? I don't remember. Do you remember what our promo says? It's, I know, Brujeria and Curanderismo, Powwow, Hoodoo, New Orleans-style Voodoo, New England witchery, and is there anything else?
Well, the two we just mentioned, Ozark magic and Appalachian magic.
Ozark Mountain magic and Appalachian granny magic. Those are all sort of the distinct branches of it. And then, of course, that's completely leaving out Native American magical systems, because
yes,
there are dozens of those.
I feel they're separate.
I'm finding that I have a little bit of an interest in them now.
Hmm.
Not to the point where... Like, there's just no way I could jump into them and do them justice at this point. It's just still, it's too much information, and I haven't finished sorting through what we've got.
Right.
But I do feel like there's connections between some of the Native American stuff and some of our stuff, like through Hoodoo especially.
Yeah.
But anyway, so there's just tons of systems over here, but those are the ones I can think of.
Yeah.
Any others that you can think of?
Now, I feel like a lot of the stuff that some Americans do, or some communities or some regions do, doesn't really have a name. because it's more folklore and passed down traditions than it is, you know, this is how you do magic. It's more...
Right. It's almost like family...
Yeah.
Family... Not, I don't want to say like a family practice, but like a family traditions.
Yeah.
And they're just things that people do in those areas. Yeah.
Very low-key and very disguised. Like, you know, I think if you told, you know, certain people that, oh, well, that, you know, that's sort of, that's kind of magical. That's a little bit witchy. They'd be like, no, it isn't.
Like, no, that's what my grandpappy did. He wasn't a witch.
Yeah. Get up on that cross.
Yeah, actually, like Michigan, I think, that Michigan area, I've heard some people talk about very specific traditions to the Michigan area.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I think that you're absolutely right. Just depends on what neighborhood you wander into.
Yeah.
So, what else we have?
Let's see. I've heard you mention several types on your podcast, but they're hard to catch sometimes regarding the tradition from Mexico and southwestern states.
Again, brujería and curanderismo. That's, brujería is just witchcraft in general, and curanderismo is healing, curing magic. All right, so there's that.
Okay. Also, what are the main differences between hoodoo and voodoo?
Care to take a stab at that one?
Well, voodoo is a religion.
Yes.
It has gods, goddesses of, you know, different levels.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain ways that you worship.
Mm-hmm. It's organized as a structure.
Yes.
There's a priesthood and a hierarchy. That's not to say that, you know, certain types of witchcraft don't have that, but voodoo does have all these religious components.
Right.
And hoodoo?
Hoodoo is a practice. Mm-hmm. It's a system of magic. You can be someone who subscribes to voodoo and still practice hoodoo.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, you can be a Christian and practice hoodoo.
Mm-hmm.
Or...
You can be Jewish and practice hoodoo. Yeah, or, you can be
Indian. I mean, I'm not saying that many do, but you could.
Yeah, well, I think there are tons of Christian people who do hoodoo. But,
yeah. I meant the Jew part. You said Jewish, so...
Yes, that's true. And I think there are few, but... But yeah, I mean, it's just... That's really what it boils down to. Hoodoo is practice that's not particularly linked to any religion. Despite what I said earlier about, you know, having a holy book, it does, like I said, it doesn't really matter which holy book.
And to be fair, you don't even really have to subscribe to any particular religious system to do hoodoo. I mean, I don't know how powerful it would necessarily be if you don't, but you don't have to.
I would put the caveat in there, though, and this is a personal caveat for me, that I think you're right. I think you can, you know, not believe in any one specific religion, but that you should probably believe in something bigger than yourself. You should believe in, you know, a god of some kind or a spiritual world, a spiritual side of life.
Why do you say that?
Because most of hoodoo has to do with those spirits. Has to do with interacting with that spiritual side of the world. And you know, if you're thinking, you know, that if I mix borage with sage, I get this result, and there's no spiritual component to it, then you're really making seasonings, not spells.
Right.
That's just my personal feeling on that. But there it is. Okay. Out there for all of you to hear and judge me for. So.
Well, no, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she says, last, I'm not really sure which American traditions you claim to follow. What are they, and who initiated you into those traditions?
Well, I was initiated by the Grand High Poobah of American witchcraft, whose name was McGillicut Muckabook. That's what he told me his name was. He was wearing a turban at the time and very bright, flashy rings. I assume he told the truth. No. Okay.
Okay.
Tackle that one? Take a stab? Walk that one around the block?
First, I want to say that this is a really good question, because I feel like a lot of people, especially people who aren't in the U.S., I don't want to say they don't understand,
because
I'm not trying to call anyone stupid, but it's kind of, it's a little bit confusing, because a lot of these systems that we talk about are not initiatory systems.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, feel free to correct me on this.
Sure.
I would say at least half the systems, the people in them don't even really see them as quote-unquote systems.
Okay.
Like, you know, if you told, you know, an old woman in Appalachian Mountains who's been, you know, doing these things for her whole life. If you told her, oh, you know, that's granny magic, you know, that's, you're doing witchcraft, she'd be, you know, she would probably tell you no, she wasn't.
She'd probably come out that rocking chair at you.
Yeah.
To be real honest. Yeah, she would not have a positive association with that.
Yeah.
I think you're right on that. I think you're right on that count because most of these systems are, you know, self-taught, self-spread systems. They're ones, yes, that people learned through associating with members of their family or associating with people in their community. But there was no formal program for teaching it.
No. There still isn't. That's the thing. Except for maybe hoodoo.
Even hoodoo, there are people who don't, you know, they learn it from actual people in the community. Nowadays, they're actually, you know, right away correspondence courses.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying nowadays. It's...
For all of them, there are courses. There are courses in Karen Turismo. There are courses in hoodoo. There are courses in powwow or brakurai. There are sort of codified systems that exist now, but no, nobody traditionally has to do any of them. You can learn them from going into those communities, from studying, you know, what other people have done, from asking questions of practitioners. Hmm. And you find yourself a teacher. You know, it doesn't have to be something where they're going to initiate you. It's almost an apprentice relationship that you take on in a lot of these systems, where you just learn them from somebody else.
Yeah.
But there's no, you know, formal passing of power or anything like that.
Right. Because it's not about, for the most part, it's not about, like, one person having all this power. It's about, you know, just being able to take that upon yourself and, you know, oh, I have a lawsuit against me. Oh, well, you know, I'll just take some of this and some of this from hoodoo and, you know, and help me with that. Like, what do we use? A galangal root in the law type stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Little John to chew.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's just it. It's, you know, it's about helping yourself or helping your community. It's not an initiatory religious system. Most of these are not initiatory religious systems. They were magical systems that happened to be practiced alongside what generally was whatever the mainstream religion was in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not an initiation in that religious sense of initiation. There's a learning curve. There's you know, people learning it, but there's not an initiatory system.
So what out of these systems, what do you subscribe to?
I subscribe to everything. I just take it all in.
That's kind of how I feel about it. Mm-hmm.
I've actually been taught in Karen Turismo and hoodoo. I've actually had teachers teach me in those two systems. And then the rest of it has all been self-study or, you know, asking questions from people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one I do not follow the most would be powwow.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's very Christian.
Exactly, yeah. Which is why I don't. But the one I probably most do is like a mix of hoodoo and Appalachian magic. I'm not really sure what else to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Appalachian magic, you know, I said earlier that every one of these systems has like correspondence courses. I've never found an Appalachian correspondence course. So that one's...
I haven't really either. But... the Appalachian communities are very insular and usually really...
They're very distrustful of outsiders.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, so it would be very hard to insinuate yourself into those communities. That being said, that's probably the one we're closest to. That and hoodoo are the two that we're closest to.
Which is why I feel closest to them.
Right, and the ones that, to be fair, I mean... stuff that you've talked about in your past makes me think, well, you kind of grew up at least tangentially in Appalachian granny magic to some extent.
I would say a little bit, and I think that's why I have a special place for it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't claim to be...
You're not, like, the seventh generation of Appalachian granny witches.
No, definitely not. If my grandmother heard me say that, she'd slap me and tell me to go read the Bible.
As would most Appalachian granny magicians.
Right. So, I mean, and I don't claim to, like, know all about Appalachian granny magic either. I just, like I said, I have an interest in it.
Mm-hmm. And that's really, I mean, that's something we've said from the very outset. This is a learning experience for us, too.
Yeah, and we have learned a lot.
Yeah, we feel like we've learned a heck of a lot. But we're still learning. We're going to be learning for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully able to be, you know, keep what we're learning coming out in podcast or blog form for quite a while.
Right.
So that's that.
Okay. So thank you very much for the question.
Yeah, that was a great question, obviously. All right. So the next one is from a fellow Podkin. This is from the Pagan Homesteader. Check out her podcast if you get a chance. Goes by the name Rihanna. Let's see. She said, okay, so way back in episode 5, you guys talked about omens and signs. And then she goes on to share a few bits of folklore that she knows quite a bit about.
Oh, right. This isn't necessarily questions. This is just really cool stuff that we wanted to share with you guys.
This is just the feedback part of it. This is some medical folklore. She happens to work in the medical field. And she talks about the first bit of folklore she has is the first has to do with the full moon. It was widely believed among medical workers that the night of the full moon will generally bring out the crazies, and more women tend to go into labor during the full moon. More than once, I have heard that the ER was an absolute madhouse, and the same could be said on the floor. Just crazy things happen, or it is exceptionally busy. At some point, it will occur to us that it is a full moon, and this explains everything.
This is very, very true. My mom works in the medical field, and she has said that for years. But it's not just medical, it's law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
You'll definitely hear police officers say, you know, you get more, like, crazy stuff going on around the full moon.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I used to work in daycare, and if the kids were going crazy, and it was just, like, a really rambunctious type of day, it was generally always near the full moon, or it was waxing
mm-hmm.
towards the full moon. So, I would say that is definitely true.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard some studies that sort of offer a neutral position on it, say it doesn't make a difference one way or the other, but most people I've talked to that are in medicine say if it doesn't statistically hold up, it sure as heck feels like it does.
Right, yeah.
So there's that. Let's see. The second thing she mentions is that things happen in threes. In the hospital, this refers to deaths and code blues. It's not unusual for people to die in a hospital, but when there are at least two deaths within a short time frame, we know to be on the lookout for a third. I think that's pretty common.
Yeah, and not just in hospitals, but in life in general.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's, and I've heard this just from my family, it's not like, I don't know if anyone else really does it this way, but it's a birth, a death, or a wedding. Like, it can be, you know, two weddings and a birth, or two deaths and a wedding, or one of all three, or, you know, just like a...
Can it be four weddings and a funeral?
No, it cannot. But, like, three big life-changing events like that tend to come in threes.
Mm. And a game my friends and I always play is Celebrity. It's a morbid game, but celebrity deaths.
That's true, too.
If you see two celebrities die, you look to see who the third one's going to be. And it usually happens.
Yeah.
But, let's see. And then she also says... when she heard us talking about death omens, it made her think of when she's taking care of the dying. There are physical signs you can look for, of course, but if a patient begins to talk to a loved one who has passed or to tell you they see angels, it's always a good idea to keep extra close eyes on them. My mother used to work in a nursing home, and she used to tell me that every year over Christmas, they'd always lose one or two patients. She said as she would walk down the hall to leave work, she would have the patients stop to tell her Merry Christmas or how much they appreciated her. When she would talk to them, they would tell her that they weren't going to be there when she came back after the holiday, and they just wanted to say goodbye. Did they know something we don't?
Very interesting.
This, from personal experience, is 100% true.
Yeah, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. When my mom passed away when I was a teenager, and I got to be there with her when she passed away in home hospice. She was at home with us. And she had cancer, and at the very end of her struggle, on the last day, she'd been slipping in and out of little comas all day.
Mm-hmm.
And right about 6 o'clock, there was just this sort of sudden stillness in the air. And she woke up, and she was very, very lucid for that brief second. And she looked around the room and was calling for my brother and I and her sister, my aunt, who happened to be there and was also a nurse. And then a friend of hers, who she'd known for a long time, happened to be visiting too. And we all gathered around her bedside, so there were two of us on each side. And she grabbed my brother and my hands and kept looking back and forth between the two of us and going, I love you, it'll be okay. 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 It was a very, very, very powerful moment. And then She stopped and looked straight ahead and got this kind of half smile on her face. And my brother said that he knows at that moment that was my grandfather coming into the room to take her across. And it was very, very powerful. But she was totally aware that was happening. She totally knew that was about to happen. You know, from 6 to 6:10 p.m., that was what it was. And she knew it was happening. 6:10 p.m., she was gone.
Wow.
Very powerful. Very powerful stuff. If that doesn't inspire belief in the spirit world, I don't know what will.
Yeah, especially witnessing that.
Yeah. Yeah, being in the room with something like that is very, very intense.
Yeah.
But it was also very beautiful in its way. All right. Do we have anything about fluffy kittens and candy?
Yeah.
That would be nice. So anyway, Rihanna, thank you very much for that. That was a really good set of questions.
Yeah.
Or a good set of comments, really. All right. What's next? We've got a neat little bit of folklore from someone on our episode 13, Lucky Charms.
She says, just a quick note to say that my grandmother, who is Korean, said that 13 people at the table meant that 2 people were in love, which I've never heard before. I think that's pretty interesting.
I do too. It's going to make me pay attention to that from now
on.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's Korean or just that family.
That's a good question.
I don't know. So, do we have any Korean people listening? Please let us know.
Well, we clearly have at least one Korean
person. Well, I mean, more than that. Besides this person who she didn't give us.
Yeah, we don't know if we can say her name on the air or not. Right. But yeah, we'd be interested to know.
And she also has another one, which I've heard before, and I believe it was my mother who told me this, was to never brush your feet with a broom when you're cleaning. Oh, wait, this is a little bit different. Sorry, I misread it. Okay. She says, never brush your feet with a broom when you're cleaning because it means you'll marry a divorcee.
And you've always heard that it means you'll never marry, right?
No, I've, okay, you know you're sitting on the couch and, you know, they're...
Don't sweep under the feet.
Yes.
Right.
To sweep under someone's feet. Either you won't get married or you won't have babies. You'll be infertile.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard it both ways.
I've heard that you won't get married that you'll be a spinster or a widow.
Mm-hmm.
That it means that either you'll be single forever or that your husband will die young.
Oof.
I know. I've heard that as well.
That's transferred over into vacuuming, I think, a little bit because...
Don't tell me that. Don't tell me that. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, because my mom, you know, whenever she would come in, if she was going to vacuum, you know, in front of the couch, she would say, move your feet. And, you know, if we just lifted them, she would say, no, you know, like put them on the couch or get up or something. Like she wouldn't actually vacuum under our feet because of that belief.
Yeah. And your family has no magical lore at all. At all.
The more we talk about things like this, the more I find it's really cool that way. But anyway.
To make you feel like you're connecting.
A little bit. Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Let's see. Got another question. And this one says, I have a few questions about Mojo Hands. Reading your blog posts on Mojos for Success, and I'd like to know if I can make these for somebody else. I would like to make one for my husband, who is a kitchen manager for a restaurant, and in a few days they'll be introducing a lot of new dishes to the menu, so I'd like to make a Mojo Hand so that everything goes smoothly. And she says, if I do this, do I have to have my husband help me with the Mojo bag? Do I pray the psalm, or do I have him do that? This will be my first time making one for someone other than myself. Quick short answer is yes, of course you can make them for other people.
Yes. I've made one very successfully for my husband.
Yeah. Do they have to put anything of their own into it? No. They don't have to. It helps.
Mine
certainly
did.
Doesn't help. Or certainly doesn't hurt. Yours did.
Mm-hmm.
Put some into
it. Yes, I remember it was a special coin.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I do remember you talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I think the short answer to that is of course you can make them for somebody else.
Do you have a long answer? Like, are there any buts to that?
Short answer, yes, with an if. Long answer, no, with a but. That's a Simpsons quote. The part about praying the psalm or having him do that, that's probably where we would get into a longer answer. I'd say when you initially set it up, pray the psalm. When you are charging it regularly, that's where he gets involved. And he'll have to take over all the work for it. He'd have to say the psalm every day and anoint the bag with oil to feed it. Things like that. So that's really how it breaks down. You can make one for somebody else, but the more that they put into it themselves, the better it's going to be for them. All right.
Okay.
Next.
Hi, Corey and Lane. I just found your podcast, and I'm enjoying it. but I have a slight complaint about episode 5. In the signs and omens part, you mentioned a couple of urban legends. One of those was the telephone line into the graveyard. You do realize that this was an episode of the original Twilight Zone. The credibility meter went down a little with that one. Otherwise, I love your show and looking forward to future episodes.
And again, we don't have permission to use the name. I did respond to this person a while back about it.
Yeah, this was a little...
It's been a few months, I think. Yeah. So yeah, I think you were the one who mentioned the story.
I think I was.
And I don't remember exactly how you phrased it. We probably should have gone back and listened to that again.
Probably.
But, meh.
We're lazy.
We're lazy. We're busy. Busy. That's the word. We're busy. Anyway, one, it was, we were mentioning it as an urban legend. Wasn't something that we had necessarily, it was off the top of your head, really, something that you kind of vaguely remembered.
Yes. I may not have said it in the episode, but I do not remember where I heard it from. And I thought I said, I don't remember where I heard this from, but that could be wrong. So,
And it's entirely possible that somebody actually told you the plot to a Twilight Zone episode and you thought of it as an urban legend.
Right. I think, honestly, I read it online as some sort of, you know, communicating with the dead type of thing, and it wasn't mentioned as an episode of the Twilight Zone. But what I wonder is what came first.
Right, because there have been stories about communicating with the dead via telephone lines since at least the late 19th century.
When the thing was invented.
Yeah. And I mean, I went back and, because of this question, I went back and looked at it, and I found a story from 1897 about somebody getting a ghostly phone call. So that's been around since then. Now, it wasn't necessarily power lines in a graveyard, but it was a ghostly phone call.
Right.
So I feel like the genre of ghostly phone calls existed well before this Twilight Zone episode. And whoever this writer is obviously made a very memorable image.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fantastic, and I think that's wonderful. But, I mean, it's just part of that larger body of lore at this point.
Right. But even if the episode did come first before any sort of, like that particular image, which it very well could have, I think it has worked its way into sort of like a general collective of...
urban legends.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I'd say that's reasonably true. All right.
But if we did, you know, kind of...
Yeah, this is not to say that we, you know, we recuse ourselves of all wrongdoing.
Right.
Well, I don't feel like we, you know, made a huge gaffe with that, but at the same time, we do apologize if that was misleading in any way. That's a story being cited off the top of our heads.
Yeah, and if it sounded like it was, you know, absolute truth coming from me, or if it, you know, like I said, I don't exactly remember where I heard it from, so...
If anything sounds like absolute truth coming from either of us, please check your ears and the volume of your stereo, because something is wrong there. Oh, okay.
But thank you for pointing that out.
Yes, thank you very much. That was, you know, it's like we said, we really invite that kind of, I don't want to call it criticism, but we really invite that kind of,
hey, question. You might have screwed up here.
Yeah, that gentle reprimand.
Yeah.
You know, not even a reprimand, that gentle sort of like, hey. Anyway, let's see. Our last feedback for the day is from Odom, who readers from our blog will have seen many, many posts from. Mm-hmm. He's a very active blog replier and a good friend to the show and to the blog. Let's see. He says, great show once again. Thanks. And he says, I actually know why walking under a ladder is bad luck. This goes back to that superstitions episode.
Yes.
The idea of walking under a ladder or in between two or more people that are talking is that you enter liminal space. Now, liminal space isn't bad, and in fact, it's the space that is most often used in sorcery and magical practice. But entering liminal space leaves you open for entering into quote-unquote crossed conditions, which is like a spiritual funk. The evil eye is an example of being crossed or bestowed with this funk. Now, this isn't to say that walking under a ladder, opening an umbrella in the house, like, will automatically make you cross, but it does increase the chances. And it gives out a lot more of really good information, which you can find in his comment on our blog. But I thought that was a really great explanation.
Yeah, definitely. And it makes total sense, even though I have never heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
But that's definitely what I'm going to be thinking of from, you know, when I avoid going under a ladder from now on.
Yeah, is that sort of like you've entered into that other world, so anything that gets projected at you is suddenly a little more likely to stick.
Mm-hmm.
And weirdly, since I've read that, I've noticed much, much more often that anytime I have to break through a conversation, it feels wrong.
I actually did that the other day when I was, I don't remember what I was doing. I think it was at work. And it was two customers who were talking. And I had to walk through them to get to another part of the building. And yeah, I actually remembered him talking about that and thought, oh yeah, that's weird. That was weird. Like, you know, it mm-hmm. just felt off.
Did you cross yourself?
No, I did not.
Yeah. So that's, I just thought that was really interesting feedback, and it makes me incredibly aware of doing that now.
Yeah.
So if I walk between people, I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Yeah. Please don't curse me. No evil eye. But so there we go. Hmm. All right. Well, that does it for the listener feedback. Thank you all so much for writing into us. This is great information, great stuff. We welcome as much of it as you can stand to send our way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people we didn't, read that was just, you know, telling us about themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, we tried to stick with like the questions and mm-hmm. some things that were shareable,
yeah.
But
we read and respond to as much as possible. We read and respond to every email or comment that comes our way. If we miss you somehow, please feel free to send us a gentle nudge saying, hey, you haven't answered my question. Can you get to this? And we'll be happy to do it. Sometimes we just get a little overwhelmed. But,
yeah, and it does get lost sometimes.
Yeah. I had one person who showed up in the spam filter like 2 months later. So it was very weird. But anyway, so thank you so much for writing into us. Please keep doing that. We love it. And that'll do it for this segment. What's next? Oh, next.
Yay. Up next is an interview with Judica Iles.
We love her.
Yay.
We're total fan boy and girl for her.
Yes, we are.
So, well, hopefully you'll enjoy the interview. And we'll talk to you again on the other side.
My name is Jillian, and I am inviting you to join me on Iron Powaka Radio for a journey into random topics and spontaneous observations about spirituality, nature, and navigation through life, all from a girl with a rather wicked perspective. You can find my adventures at ironpowaka.com and download me at iTunes. So take some time out of your own mind and step into my collective. Iron Powaka Radio is tuned in to turn on.
All right, on the phone with us tonight at New World Witchery is magical author extraordinaire Judica Iles. I hope I'm saying that correctly. The author of The Encyclopedia of Spirits, The Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells, Magic When You Need It, Pure Magic, Emergency Magic, and I believe her latest book is The Wiser Field Guide to Witches. Judica, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Am I pronouncing that last name correctly?
You know, I don't even worry about pronunciation anymore.
Oh, no.
It's a Hungarian name, and the Hungarian alphabet is different. Mm-hmm. From the standard European alphabet, it's actually pronounced Elish.
Elish.
Technically, because an S in Hungarian is an SH. If you want an S sound, you have to spell it SZ.
Oh.
But I usually pronounce it Illis, but as long as you don't call me illness.
No, we will avoid
that. I correct
that.
No one.
Well, great. Okay, well, thank you for letting me know that. That's really helpful. We've been calling you Judica Iles, and we reference you a lot. So.
Yes, we do.
It's okay. You and a lot of other people, it's not a problem. It's not something I worry about.
Okay. Well, thank you. You're very gracious about that.
That name has been pronounced, because, you know, the way we pronounce it, I pronounce it Illis, but that in itself is a mispronunciation. But, you know, without changing the spelling, what are you going to do? So,
right.
It doesn't make a difference. It's just a pronunciation.
I believe my grandfather was Zakharievich when he came over to America. That got shortened to Zach. So
yeah.
that happens, I think.
I have family from different parts of Europe. So I have Hungarian family and Romanian family. And, you know, I would get birthday cards. No one ever asked me how I wanted to spell my name. Mm-hmm. They just spelled it whatever was appropriate to their language, their origin. It's okay. It's not a big deal.
Great. All right. We'd like to start by asking you a little bit about your background. How did you get started into magic in the first place? Where did all that start for you?
You know, I wish I had a really clever answer. How did I get started with magic and witchcraft and the occult in the first place? And honestly, the answer is I don't know. I always had an interest from a really, really tiny age. I was raised, I am the first person in my family who was born in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raised by Europeans, really steeped in fairy tales. That's, you know, my early religion is fairy tales.
Oh.
And I always identified with the witch. I always worried about the witch. You know, Hansel and Gretel?
Uh-huh.
It was a really stressful story. But not because of those kids. Because of the witch, because I knew that the witch was going to die.
Oh.
And so that was incredibly stressful for me. And I don't know. You know, my sister, I have a sister who is a dozen years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was six, she started college, and she went to college across the street from the old Samuel Weiser bookstore.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. And she used to come home with stuff. And she would come home with astrology books and numerology books. And I learned how to, my mother taught herself English by teaching me how to read. So I learned how to read. I was three. I could read. She brought home a deck of tarot cards, and I fell in love with them.
Mm-hmm.
And these were not even the Rider-Waite cards, which are very colorful.
Mm-hmm.
My sister is an art student. She was an art student. And so she brought home the BOTA deck, Brothers of the Builders of the Adytum.
Oh, yes. Which, yeah.
Yeah. It's. Because it's intended to be colored in. It's a black and white. It's like a coloring book. It's like a mm-hmm. little mini coloring book because the practitioner is actually supposed to color in each card, so it becomes very, very personal for you. And I just fell in love with those cards. And, you know, why? Who knows? You know, why does anyone fall in love with whatever they fall in love with? But it was a real visceral love for me. And
mm-hmm.
same with essential oils with aromatherapy. I just fell in love. And, you know, you could start to speculate about genetic memory or past lives or, you know, the calling of the spirits. You can witch blood, all kinds of stuff. But I have no real good answer other than, you know, here I am.
And you just sort of felt right when you started doing it?
And it was a calling.
Mm-hmm.
It was a calling. I just, you know, yeah. I mean, a real passion, and it continues to be a passion. So it's a real true love because, you know, we're talking some years now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still given the opportunity. If I had nothing to do, I'd sit around and read occult books.
that's sort of my dream too. If you find a place where you can get paid to do that, let me know.
Oh yeah.
Well, you said that your I love how you put it that your sort of your first religion was fairy tales.
Yeah.
I find that fairy and folk tales have some of the best magical lore in them. Do you sort of find that to be true too?
Yeah, I really am convinced, and I write about this in one of my books, the Element Encyclopedia of Witchcraft. Fairy tales, and not all of them, but there's a lot of hidden information in there, because a lot of ritual information, a lot of magical information, a lot of pre-Christian or pre-Islamic religions, they were forbidden, they were banished. You could get in trouble for discussing them openly, for teaching them openly, you know, bad trouble.
Mm.
But fairy tales for a very long time were the domain of women. They were told in spinning rooms or in bathhouses, you know, communal bathhouses. They were sort of story oriented, so children would hear them too, including male children also, because until boys got old enough, they would hang with the women.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of magical instruction and a lot of shamanic, sort of secret shamanic instruction in there. You have to sort of have the ears to hear them, and it's very easy to sort of say, oh, no, it's just a story. So, you know, people weren't, you know, it was a way of communicating information and preserving information without doing it in such an overt way that you were bound to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff in there. It's really interesting. A lot of goddess information, a lot of magical information, a lot of information on how to work with spirits, what is the proper way to behave in the presence of the spirits, as opposed to, you know, how, you know, what should you not do to avoid getting into trouble with them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That makes me think of like the Mother Hola story.
Yeah.
How the,
yeah.
The
which
the
is one of the most overt stories.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot, if you read references to iron, I mean, that's always the thing to pick up your ears. There's certain references to iron. You know, people, you have to perform a task that involves wearing out 3 pairs of iron shoes.
Mm.
Or things with odd legs. You know, the person, the witch in, there's a Hans Christian Andersen story, the Snow Queen.
Mm-hmm.
The witch limps.
Mm-hmm.
She looks like an ordinary woman, but she limps. Because limping, in addition to just possibly being, you know, somebody might have arthritis, but limping is often a reference to shamanism. A lot of shamans are identified by their gait.
Mm-hmm.
They limp, they hobble for various reasons. And so this will show up. It's sort of, it's like a little signal for you to prick up your ears.
Mm-hmm.
In Jewish fairy tales, women with disheveled hair, also in Slavic fairy tales, they won't say which, but as soon as they start talking about the women with disheveled hair, they're talking about witches or they're talking about demon goddesses.
Mm.
That's really interesting.
In cultures where women had to bind their hair normally or wrap their hair up.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so that disheveled hair is your tip-off that there's something else going on here.
I love that. I just love that. That's absolutely how I look at fairy and folk tales, especially.
I love them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a question for you. How did you decide to write 5,000 spells? I mean, like, was it like a lifelong collection of different spells and lore, or did you just decide and then go?
No, and it wasn't my decision. If I had no publisher, if I had said to a publisher, oh, you know, I've got a 1,000-page book that's going to weigh 5 pounds and hardcover, let's publish it, they would have dismissed me. It's actually, that was sort of the culmination of a journey that goes back to about 1986.
Mm.
And around 1986, I was married and I wanted to get pregnant and I didn't get pregnant. And this is before infertility was as open or as popular a topic as it is now. I was sort of a precursor.
Mm.
And we went to physicians and I didn't really like the solutions they offered to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, well, I'm going to go buy this book because I'm sure there's a book with the information that I need. And I, you know, had many years of religious instruction, and I knew in the Bible, you know, Rachel gets the mandrake root, and, you know, I knew that there was folkloric information about getting pregnant, and I, you know, was sure it would work. I just needed a book to explain it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, naively went to the bookstore, and I could see the book in my head, and it wasn't there. And it hadn't been published, and it still hasn't been published. But I began researching, and initially I was just researching traditional approaches to fertility and infertility, and eventually it worked. I mean, I am my own testimonial. I have 2 children, but the information hooked me. And it hooked me in, and I kept researching because it's just very fascinating. And I have an unpublished manuscript that has just been incredibly lucky for me because I send it out to publishers, and no one really wants it because it blends. As of this point, I think I'm going to try to send it out again maybe next year or even publish it myself at this point. It blends spiritual information with magical information, with therapeutic information, and the response I've always received is, but where will we put it at a store? You know, because the common wisdom is that you could only put a book in one section,
mm-hmm.
it can only go on one shelf, where do you put it? And if you're too diverse, well, then, you know, they'd rather not stock it at all. But I spent years just, you know, passionately researching international approaches to infertility. And as I was doing it, I kept finding other interesting things. And I came from a magical background anyway, and some of those spells I knew from way before. But I started, you know, in the beginning, I was just, if it didn't apply to infertility, I didn't keep it. I didn't record it. Mm-hmm. I didn't preserve it, you know, because I was like a collector. You know, I call myself a spell collector, but initially it was on a very, very specific subject.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, some of the stuff was just too good to, like, not collect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started Maria Padilla. I found Maria Padilla, who is a Brazilian spirit, Brazilian goddess, at that time, and she really is not a fertility goddess, which is so interesting that I couldn't, I just couldn't leave her by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
So I started recording, and I have, like, shoeboxes full of note cards on all different topics. And at that point, just topics that interested me, you know, things that caught my attention. And I eventually sent out my manuscript, the first, you know, and it was turned down, but it landed on the publisher's desk, and it had a chapter, and I was very naive. I didn't know what I was doing. I had really no advice from anyone, and I just wrote up a 1,000-page manuscript. I just put everything I knew in the manuscript, assuming that, not realizing that I had to sell someone, you know? I just thought, well, they'll read this, and they'll tell me what they want, which, you know, in a way is what happened. Ironically, the chapter I assumed that no one would want was a chapter on magic spells for fertility. It was the only thing that someone wanted. And the publisher, it was the original Element Books. Element Books eventually went bankrupt and was purchased by HarperCollins. Hence, its publisher is now Harper Element. But they asked me, would I write a general book on magic spells, an instructional book, and they had the title. They told me it was going to be called Earth Mother Magic. I think they had the title and they had the cover already. Would I write it?
Mm-hmm.
And just incorporate this information? And I said, okay. It was something I could do, and I wanted to do it, and I said, okay. And so I wrote that book, and that book is now out of print, but it's been reissued as Pure Magic by Wiser Books,
mm-hmm.
who is the descendant of the Wiser Bookstore.
Right.
So I've really come full circle. I mean, that's very, very significant to me, at least.
Mm-hmm. That's very serendipitous. I love that.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then I ended up doing another. I did a small spell book for them, and my editor knew that I had collections of spells. And in the meantime, I began teaching classes in New York City. I was teaching at the Learning Annex. I taught people how to, real hands-on, making magical oils, powders, potions. They gave us a room in a New York City public school in art class, so we had sinks. It was really easy to it was a really nice setup to work in. And people would come to my classes. Their classes were packed, and people paid for these classes, and they were packed. This was before 5,000 spells.
Uh-huh.
And they would make these great oils. And, you know, they participated in the classes. And as the classes were over, a line would develop.
Mm.
And apparently, people had participated in this class and had gone through the entire class because actually they just wanted to ask me a question. And
wow.
Inevitably, the question was illness-related. Someone, either they or someone they loved, had some kind of an illness. And either it couldn't be diagnosed, or it could be diagnosed, but conventional medicine wasn't working for it. And did I know a magical solution? I didn't. Because they were asking me about things that were really, really out of my experience.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt bad, you know, and I began to research. And I began accumulating all these healing spells. And in the meantime, my editor and publisher knew I had this huge collection of spells. And started talking about, I had done, the previous book is, I think, what is that? It's called Magic When You Need It Now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 150 spells. It's like a little botanical book. And he said, well, could we do 1,000 spells? And I said, yeah, sure. Because I was still trying to sell my fertility book.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were having two different discussions. I wasn't really taking him very seriously because I was trying to explain to him why we needed to publish this fertility book. And he was going, you know, well, could we do a book with 5,000 spells? Could we do a book with 3,000 spells? And I was going, you know, yeah, hypothetically, you know, at one point we were up to 10,000 spells.
Wow.
You know, and hypothetically, you could. And I have more spells saved away for a follow-up someday because there is an infinite number of spells.
Mm-hmm.
So you could really do a spell a day for the rest of your life if you wanted to. But I wasn't really taking him seriously. I was going, yeah, of course you could do that. Of course, you know, let's talk about this instead. But he hooked me in. You know, he got me. Mm-hmm. And he talked me into doing that book. And it was originally supposed to be 450 pages.
A little bit bigger than that now.
Yeah, I know. I mean, if you look at the contract was for 450 pages. And it was supposed to be done in a certain amount of time. And it was, I think, the first time in my life I've ever been late for anything. So very punctual normally.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, I was writing with no page numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was convinced that it was going to be canceled.
Uh-huh.
I was convinced because it was late. It was over double the size. I couldn't imagine who was going to want to read this. I thought the publisher was going to cancel it and ask for their money back before I was ever finished with it. So I was just trying so desperately to finish it as quickly as possible before they could cancel it.
Well, we're all really, really thankful that
yes,
your
definitely.
Publisher pushed you in that direction and that you got it done.
They didn't cancel it.
Yes.
I mean, because they would have been within their legal rights to cancel it. But. Mm-hmm.
Well, however it worked out fantastically. But
that book had a life of its own. That book really, it was like if you ride a horse. I mean, it was like I was just holding on. I had 5,000 spells when we started, and the publisher was really wed to the number.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, they were on file cards. They were handwritten, and then I was transcribing.
Wow.
And at some point, I lost a file. Then later, it turned up again. But I lost a file, and I thought that the book was done because, you know, as soon as I finished transcribing all the cards, well, then it will be done. But actually, you only had 3,700.
Wow.
And they count. You know, there's actually a little bit more than 5,000 in there because there are some spells there are sort of extra spells that are written about in the text. It's counted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew that because somewhere there is a reader who is going to count it.
That's going to be a very tedious job.
5,000 spells you've got to have. You've got to live up to the marketing.
Right.
So there, you know, they both myself and the publisher, we really counted and, So that was an experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. We're really thankful that it wound up getting published, of course. I noticed that most of the spells that you write about tend to be more folk magic oriented as opposed to ceremonial. Do you tend to do more folk magic than ceremonial? Do you do more solitary than group work?
For two reasons. One, yes, I personally, I am more interested in folk magic, but there's another reason also. Mm-hmm. When you write about folk magic, you can write about an individual spell.
Mm-hmm.
When you begin to write about ceremonial magic, it's more than the spell. Then you have to discuss the ritual, and you have to discuss the circle casting. You know,
is a really good point.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have to appreciate that, you know, in 5,000 spells, in any book, there's only a finite number of pages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew we were in trouble. The book was supposed to be 450 pages when I had written the introduction, and the introduction has instructions in it. You know, for people who, if you've never cast a spell, there is information in there. And I was already over 100 pages. So, you know, because it's an object, it's a thing. You can only squeeze, so it's a limited space. And when you write ceremonial magic, and you'll see most books in ceremonial magic are very specific, and that's why, because it's a whole package. You can't just isolate an aspect of it or a component of it in the way that you can with folk magic. A lot of folk magic is very spontaneous. It's done in moments of need. Some of the most effective spells I've done have been just, you know, the spur of the moment, you feel that passion. You have a situation and you just react to it. And there may be very little preparation. It can be very, very effective. But that's not the ceremonial method. I personally have worked both. To go back to your question, I work really solitary now because since I started writing the big books, I'm alone a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I have also worked in a group, in a group dynamic also. I've done both.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a preference, or is it just sort of whatever happens
to be
working at the time?
I like both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you work with other people, the key becomes making sure that everyone's goals are synchronized and harmonious. In the larger the group, sometimes you don't realize that people, you know, not everyone has the same goals or the same desires, or people have complicated emotions or emotions towards other people. And so if you have something that a group will want to work together about, that they're in harmony about, that it's extremely powerful. But if it's something very personal for you, you're sometimes better off either working by yourself or in a small group.
Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
But that's just a human thing. You know, you don't always realize that, you know, we think we know people. And I mean, and anybody who's divorced can tell you that, you know, people are full of surprises. you think you know people, and you think you know them intimately, and you do. But people are very complicated, and people are always evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what you desire can trigger negative emotions in other people, even if they love you.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. that can sometimes work to negate a spell.
Mm. That's very poignant and very well put.
Well, on a lighter note, what is your favorite spell, or one of the most interesting magical experiences you've had?
My favorite spell, and I don't know if even some people would not consider this a spell, but it would probably be Invocation of Michael Archangel.
Mm-hmm.
I work very closely with Michael Archangel, and that's something that somebody taught me that, dozen years ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something I do twice daily minimum.
Wow.
And I find it very effective. It's requesting the protection mm-hmm. of the Archangel Michael, either for yourself or for someone else. Interesting story. I can tell you my first personal experience with a condition oil.
Mm-hmm.
I went for a reading with someone who eventually became a coven sister. And I went for a reading because I was sort of in a negative situation. And the situation was negative enough that it made her nervous. And mm-hmm. when I left, I lived in Hoboken, New Jersey at the time, and she was in New York, and you take the train, between like a subway train, fast train, between the two places. And when I left, she stuck a cotton ball in a bottle of protection oil and said, "Take this with you."
Hmm.
And it was a very nondescript oil. It was, you know, I just stuck it in my pocket. I just wasn't even thinking about it. And I just stuck it in my pocket. And I left. And you couldn't smell a thing. And then eventually, I was on the train, and all of a sudden, the smell got strong. All of a sudden, it was there. And it was not, and I have to say, it was not in the sense of smell. It was kind of a perfumey smell.
Mm-hmm.
People got up and moved.
Interesting.
And I don't think that they realized why they were getting up and moving. People were just... I had like a circle around me. People got up and moved. And,
wow.
Yeah, and I got home and I said, I'm going to learn how to make that.
Yeah, that I can imagine that would be my reaction too.
Yeah.
I'd be calling for the recipe.
Yeah, I mean, just people just, you know... Just started getting up.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, we don't want to take up too much of your time, so we'll wrap up a little bit. But I would like to ask you about any current or future projects you're working on. I know that the Wiser Field Guide to Witches is coming out.
The Wiser Field Guide to Witches comes out October 1st. It's like a little mini encyclopedia to witches of all kinds. historical witches, methods of witchcraft, literary witches, movie witches, comic book witches. It's a very fun book. And then I am working on a book. I'm working on another encyclopedia. I have a book called The Encyclopedia of Spirits, which was released earlier this year.
I love that book. I'm just going to tell you. I adore that book so much.
It was supposed to be bigger. It was supposed to have saints and angels. But it got too big. And there was, you know, binding. There was no room for it. So we removed the saints and the angels, and hopefully one day the angels will also have their own book. But I am now working on an encyclopedia devoted to saints of many spiritual traditions. So both canonized official saints and saints like Saint Christopher who have been removed from the role but who are still considered official saints.
And then like Jose Gregorio and the folk saints.
And then also like, you know, Santa Muerte.
Oh, yes.
You know, Don Pedro Jaramillo, all the different types of unofficial saints. And I've got all kinds of information, very, very similar to the setup of the Encyclopedia of Spirits, very similar type of book, very practical. And hopefully that will be out sometime in 2011.
And you will be getting my money then. Absolutely.
I can come back and we can talk about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to say, I adore everything I've read from you.
Thank you.
Same here. Love
it's
it.
Thank wonderful.
You. We reference it all the time.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful stuff. Miss Elish, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I'm just practicing the pronunciation so I get it right.
I got it.
But we really appreciate you coming on our show tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much.
It's been a wonderful experience. And we will hope to have you back with publication of subsequent books as well.
Anytime.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Velma Nightshade from Witches Brew Haha, inviting you to join me each week as I discuss all things witchy. Witches Brew Haha reaches from the controversial topics to the ridiculous reality that being a modern witch entails. From book reviews to hot-button pagan news, from stone and herb studies to practical magic tips and advice, Witches Brew Haha is a bewitching blend of the best a magical life has to offer. Find it on iTunes or at witchesbrewhaha.com. And remember, never be afraid to think outside the cauldron. Blessed be.
All right. That was Judica Isles. Well, probably not that was Judica Isles. Probably you just heard podcast promos. So before the podcast promos for the fabulous podcasts from the fabulous pod kid, we had Judica Isles interviewed. And because we wanted to get that interview and the listener feedback and have a little bit of a post interview wrap up, we're not going to be able to do the spelled out and witchcraft segments tonight. They will be back for our next show, I believe.
Yes.
But for tonight, we want to talk a little bit about the awesomeness that is Judica. Elish, I keep calling her Isles.
I know, we're stuck on that pronunciation now, but she didn't seem to mind.
She was cool. She was just cool in every way.
She was.
So what did you find interesting?
What was it? She made a really good point about how, folk magic was just kind of better for the types of books that she writes.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, you don't have to explain this whole construct around the spell. It's just the spell itself, which I do really, because she, you know, she, like I said, she made the really good point that, the people who use them don't really have like a construct around it. It's just, oh, I need this. I need to do something, you know, for this. I need money. I need healing, this, that. And they just do it. And it's a necessity kind of thing instead of, I don't know. I just really liked what she said about that.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about there, like where it's not like you have to have a full-blown system to work in or even a full-blown tradition. You can actually just use a few spells that'll get you by for your specific needs.
It's kind of what we were saying earlier in that, you know, a lot of what we call magical systems aren't really seen as magical systems by the people who practice them.
Exactly. Exactly. They're just things you do.
Right.
And I think that fits in very well with what she was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. Sort of on the counter side to that, she said something, a phrase that has just stuck with me that I adore, which is the... That she basically follows the religion of fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying, like, I've never heard anybody express things in that specific phrase, But if I had to say what my religion was, I probably would say that at this point.
Yeah, I know that really struck a chord with you.
It was just perfect.
Yeah. Because that is your main, like your kind of special thing that's really special to you.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, going through folk tales and fairy tales and...
And finding all the stuff that's been embedded in them.
Right.
Without necessarily saying, oh, this has to fit into this construct, this worldview that already exists. It's much more of a, I want to see what worldview exists within those stories.
Mm-hmm.
And pull that out and enjoy those.
Right. So, yeah.
So the reason I was saying that was the flip side is that it's interesting because it's sort of like a tradition.
Right.
It's sort of like a system.
A little bit.
It's just one that... It's one that's sort of already there organically. It's not one that, you know, has to be put down in an outlined format and
mm-hmm.
you follow it exactly.
Yeah, you can't really do that, I guess.
Mm-mm. You can learn the stories, and the stories will constantly reveal something new.
Yeah.
Which is something, that's something I found out repeatedly mm-hmm. from doing this blog and podcast.
Yeah.
Like, you can keep going back to the same stories and finding completely new elements. Like, I can't tell you how much Young Goodman Brown means to me anymore, because there's so many layers to it.
Yeah, especially when we read it. I mean, I had read it before for a class, and then, like, I you know, I knew what it was about, but when we sat down and read it, we kind of picked out every little piece, and I don't know, mm-hmm. it was just...
Like the whole, oh, he's got a serpent-shaped staff?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just something I thought was very well articulated. So was there anything else that she said that struck a chord with you?
Well, what about you?
Oh, way to turn it around. Well played, man. Well played. I think I had asked a question about folk magic in group versus solitary
mm-hmm.
setting.
Mm-hmm.
And she made a really excellent point, which is the larger you get the group, the more difficult it is to keep a central focus.
Yes.
And I think, if you're doing a big group ritual, for example, to heal the Gulf oil spill, I think that's very easy to do because everybody can be focused on that issue pretty basically and work towards a common goal.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're doing something that's much more personal, you know, if you're doing a prosperity spell, it's probably better to isolate it down to yourself or maybe yourself and one other person. The tighter you can keep those kinds of spells, I think the more effective they become.
Yeah, I agree.
No, but, you know, no one can carry your mojo bag but you, basically.
Right.
So I answered. What about you? Turn it back around.
Oh, let's see. I don't know. I'm really excited about her new book.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, The Wiser Guide to Witches?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, we're going to have to go get that.
We totally are.
Maybe we could do a book review on it.
We should.
Yeah.
We should do like a little book club thing. Maybe we could get our listeners in on that too.
Hmm, interesting.
Do a little book club. Everybody get, you know, everybody that wants to participate, we'll all get the book, we'll read it, and we'll do a show discussing it.
Okay.
I think this is a plan.
All right, let's do it. We should schedule that for November or...
At least.
Or December, though, because let me tell you guys, October is going to be jam-packed, and we're really excited about it.
It's going to be crazy, y'all. Yeah. We've got...
Do you have anything else to say about the interview?
Other than to say thank you so much for letting us interview you.
Definitely, thank you.
It was marvelous. She's... Just absolutely one of the most gracious people we've ever talked to. Just very, very, very giving in conversation and very, very, like, knowledgeable about her subject.
Yeah.
I loved that.
Definitely.
I want her shoeboxes full of notes, though. Like, I just totally want to be like, whenever you're done with those, just send them my way, please. I love that. But yeah, that's it.
Okay, because I do want to talk about October
okay.
and kind of what's coming.
Sure.
Well, tell our listeners...
You brought it up. This is on you. I'm out, y'all. Just a little clappy motion, y'all. So,
okay. Well, Corey's going to be reading some kind of scary stories or...
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be trying to do sort of like Southern, maybe not even Southern, but sort of American folk tales, ghost stories,
mm-hmm.
Things like that.
And we're going to be telling ghost stories in one of our, like our personal ghost stories in a future podcast, probably the one that's going to be released on Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Or as close to Halloween as
yeah,
as possible.
We can get it. What else?
In the earlier part of the month, we'll be doing, we're hoping we're going to be doing an episode on ancestors.
Yes, that'll be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so excited about October.
October's going to be awesome. Speaking of October, if you are going to be in the greater Chicago area, and you hear this in time, on October 2nd, I believe, it's the Saturday, first Saturday in October, which is, I believe, the 2nd. If you're in the greater Chicago area and you would be interested in meeting myself or Podkin from several other shows, Lane, unfortunately, will not be able to be there.
No, I will not.
She's a loser. No. But it's going to be me. It's going to be Firelight from Inciting a Riot. Velma Nightshade from Witch's Brouhaha.
Jillian from Iron Powaka.
Isaac and Jasmine from Pagan Hooligans. Britsu from Urban Greenwich. And Scarlet from Lakefront Pagan Voice. I think that's everybody. I'm leaving somebody out, I apologize, but I think that's everybody. We're all going to be converging on the Witchy Wearable store in Midlothian, Illinois, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on that first Saturday in October. So it's sort of a meet and greet. There's going to be a little witchy craft fair going on there. We'd love to see you. Love to get a chance to meet with you. She sighed longingly.
I'm so sad. I can't go.
Oh, I know.
It's all right, though.
Maybe another time.
I'll be there in spirit.
You'd be casting spells on me from a distance. Be like, you're having fun. I'm stuck here. So, yeah, that would be fun if y'all want to check it out. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, October's going to be real busy.
Yes, it is. And we have to figure out what we're doing for Samhain, too.
And I've got multiple Samhain commitments.
Yes, you do.
I'm just going to, like, my hair's going to be totally white by the end of the month. It's crazy. But it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. All right. Anything else we need to mention?
Do you want to mention the shop?
Oh, yes. Again, this I think we mentioned this in the last episode, too. We're relaunching our Compass and Key Etsy shop, which will have a number of condition oils and some other products, probably with a sort of limited offering at first, but hoping to expand that a little bit. I expect to have it up and running by the end of September. It may even be up and running by the time you hear the show. I kind of doubt it'll be quite there by then. I've got a few things that need to tighten up on the actual Etsy site to make it work. But I mean, I imagine within this next week, it should be up and running.
Cool.
So people can buy from that. And yeah, so please do if you want to. We love it. The money helps support us, support the show.
Yes.
It's good stuff. That's everything
October? I guess so, yeah.
October's going to be busy. Dude.
So anyway, well, thanks for listening. I guess.
Yeah. If you would like to contact us, if you'd like to give us feedback, obviously we love getting it. You can reach us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Or there's the blog, newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
And we would love to hear from you. I guess if that's all we've got, then until next time, thanks for listening.
Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music.